Good evening. You're listening to Goodnight Stories with Nick. This is episode 2 from The Eye of Argon by Jim Tice, chapters 3 and onward. If you listened yesterday, you heard the story of Grignir, the barbarian, and his various exploits. When we left off, Grignir had been knocked unconscious by one of the soldiers in the noble's court. Tonight, we'll pick up where last night's episode ended. Chapter 3. Consciousness returned to Grignir in stigmatic pools as his mind gradually cleared of the cobwebs cluttering its inner recesses, yet the Stygian cloud of charcoal ebony remained, an incompatible shield of blackness, enhanced by the bleak absence of sound. Grignir's muddled brain reeled from the shock of the blow he had received to the back of his skull. The events leading to his predicament were slow to filter back to him. He dickered with the notion that he was dead, and had descended or sunk, however it may be, to the shadowed land beyond the aperture of the grave, but rejected this hypothesis when his memory sifted back within his grips. This was not the land of the dead. It was something infinitely more precarious than anything the grave could offer. Death promised an infinity of peace, not the finite misery of an inactive life of confined torture, forever concealed from the life-bearing shafts of the beloved rising sun. The orb that had been before taken for granted, yet now cherished above all else. To be forever refused further glimpses of the snow-capped summits of the land of his birth, never again witness the shrill of plundering unexplored lands beyond the crest of a bleeding horizon, and perhaps worst of all, the denial to ever again encompass the lustful excitement of caressing the naked curves of a body, of a trim, yund wench. This was indeed one of the buried chasms of hell concealed within the inner depths of the palace's despised interior. A fearful ebony chamber devised to drive to the brinks of insanity the minds of the unfortunately condemned through the inapt solitude of a limbo of listless, dreary silence. Chapter 3.5. A tightly rung elliptical circle of torches cast their wavering shafts prancing morbidly over the smooth surface of a rectangular, ridged altar. Expertly chiseled forms of grotesque gargoyles graced the oblique rim, protuberating the length of the grim orifice of death, staring forever ahead into nothingness in complete ignorance of the bloody rites enacted in their presence. Brown flaking stains decorated the golden surface of the ridge surrounding the altar, which banked to a small slit at the lower right-hand corner of the altar. The slit stood above a crudely pounded pail, which had several silver-meshed chalices hanging at its sides. Dangling at the rim of golden mallet, the handle of which was engraved with images of twisted faces and groved at its far end with slots designed for a snug hand grip. The head of the mallet was slightly larger than a clenched fist and shaped into a smooth oval mass. Encircling the marble altar was a congregation of leering shaman. Eerie chants of a bygone age, originating unknown eons before the memory of man, were being uttered from the buried recesses of the acolyte's deep lings. Orange paint was smeared in generous globules over the tops of the priests' wrinkled, shaven scalps, while golden rings projected from the lobes of their pink ears. Ornate robes of lusher purple satin enclosed their bulging torsos, attached around their waists with silvered silk lashes latched with ebony buckles in the shape of morose, misshaped skulls. Dangling about their necks were oval-fashioned medallions held by thin gold chains, featuring in their centers blood-red rubies, which resembled crimson fetish eyeballs. Cushioning their bare feet were plush red felt slippers, with pointed golden spikes projecting from their tips. Situated in front of the altar, and directly adjacent to the copper pail, was a massive jade idol, a misshaped, hideous bust of the shaman's pagan deity. The shimmering green idol was placed in a sitting posture on an ornately carved golden throne raised upon a round, dvori-plated dais, its bulging arms and webbed hands resting on the padded arms of the seat. Its head was entwined in golden snake. Its head was entwined in golden snake-like coils hanging over its oblong ears, which tapered off to a thin, hollow points. Its nose was a bulging triangular mass sunken in at its sides with tau-gapping nostrils. Dramatic beneath the nostrils was a twisted, shaggy-lipped mouth, giving the impression of a slavering, sadistic grimace. At the foot of the heathen deity, a slender, pale-faced female, naked but for a golden jeweled harness enshrouding her huge, outcropping breasts, supporting long silver laces which extended to her thigh, stood before the pearl-white field with noticeable shivers traveling up and down the length of her exquisitely molded body. Her delicate lips trembled beneath soft, narrow hands, as she attempted to conceal herself from the piercing stare of the ambivalent idol. Glaring directly down towards her was the stony, cycloptic face of the bloated deity. Gaping from its single, oblong socket was scintillating many faceted scarlet emerald, a brilliant gem seeming to possess a life all of its own. A priceless gleaming stone, capable of domineering the wealth of conquering empires. The Eye of Argon. Chapter 4. All knowledge of measuring time had escaped Grignir. When a person is deprived of the sun, moon, and stars, he looses all conception of time as he had previously understood it. It seemed as if years had passed, if time was being measured by terms of misery and mental anguish, yet he estimated that his stay had only been a few days in length. He has slept 3 times and has been fed 5 since his awakening in the crypt. However, when the notions of a body are restricted, its needs are also affected. The need for nourishment and slumber are directly proportional to the functions the body has performed, meaning that when free and active, Grignir may become hungry every 6 hours and witness the desire for sleep every 15 hours, whereas in his present condition he may encounter the need for food every 10 hours and the want for rest every 20 hours. All methods he had before depended upon were extinct in the dismal pit. Hence, he may have been imprisoned for 10 minutes or 10 years, he did not know, resulting in a disheartened emotion deep within his being. The food, if you can honor the molding lumps of fetid mush to that extent, was borne to him by 2 guards who opened a portal at the top of his enclosure and shoved it to him in wooden bowls, retrieving the food and water bowls from his previous meal at the same time, after which they threw back the bolts on the iron latch and returned to their other duties. Since deprived of all other means of nourishment, Grignir was impelled to eat the tainted slop in order to ward off the pangs of starvation, though as he stuffed it into his mouth with his filthy fingers and struggled to force it down his throat, he imagined it was that which had been spurned by the hounds stationed at various segments of the palace. There was little in the barren vault that could occupy his body or mind. He had paced out the length and width of the enclosure time and time again, and tested every granite slab which consisted the walls of the prison in hopes of finding a hidden passage to freedom, all of which was to no avail other than to keep him busy and distract his mind from wandering to thoughts of what he believed was his future. He had memorized the number of strides from one end to the other of the cell, and knew the exact number of slabs which made up the bleak dungeon. Numerous schemes were introduced, and alternately discarded in turn, as they succored to unravel to him no means of escape which stood the slightest chance of success. Anguish continued to mount as his means of occupation were rapidly exhausted. Suddenly, without no tithe, he was routed from his contemplations as he detected a faint scratching sound at the end of the crypt opposite him. The sound seemed to be caused by something trying to scrape away at the granite blocks the floor of the enclosure consisted of, the sandy scratching of something like an animal's claws. Grignir gradually groped his way to the other end of the vault, carefully feeling his way along with his hands ahead of him. When a few inches from the wall, a loud, penetrating squeal and the scampering of small padded feet reverberated from the walls of the roughly hewn chamber. Grignir threw his hands up to shield his face and flung himself backwards upon his buttocks. A fuzzy form bounded to his hairy chest, burying its talons in his flesh, while gnashing towards his throat with its grinding white teeth, its sour, fetid breath scorching the swarming barbarian's dilating nostrils. Grignir grappled with the lashing flexor muscles of the repugnant body of a gargantuan brown-hided rat, striving to hold its razor teeth from his juicy jugular as its beady gray organs of sight glazed into the flaring emeralds of its prey. Taking hold of the rodent around its lean, growling stomach with both hands, Grignir pried it from his crimson-rent breast, removing small patches of flayed flesh from his chest in the motion between the squalid black claws of the starving beast. Holding the rodent, holding the rodent at arm's length, he cupped his right hand over its frothing face, contracting his fingers into a vice-like fist over the quivering head. Retaining his grips on the rat, Grignir flexed his outstretched arms while slowly twisting his right hand clockwise and his left hand counterclockwise motion. The rodent let out a tortured squall, drawing scarlet as it violently dug its foam-flecked fangs into the barbarian's sweating palm, causing his face to contort to an ugly grimace as he cursed beneath his breath. With a loud crack, the rodent's head parted from its squirming torso, sending out a sprinkling shower of crimson gore, and trailing a slimy string of disjointed vertebrae, snapped trachea, esophagus, and jugular, disjointed hyoid bone, morose purple stretched hide, and blood-seared muscles. Flinging the broken body to the floor, Grignir shook his blood-streaked hands and wiped them against his thigh until dry, then wiped the blood that had showered his face and from his eyes. Again sitting himself upon the jagged floor, he prepared to once more revamp his glum meditations. He told himself that as long as he still breathed the gust of life through his lungs, hope was not lost. Yet he told himself this, but found it hard to comprehend in his gloomy surroundings. Yet he was still alive, his bulging sinews at their peak of marvel, his struggling mind floating in a morale of impressed excellence of thought. Plot after plot sifted through his mind in energetic contemplations. Then it hit him. Minutes may have passed in silent thought, or days, he could not tell, but he stumbled at last upon a plan that he considered as holding a slight margin of plausibility. He might die in the attempt, but he knew he would not submit without a final bloody struggle. It was not a foolproof plan, yet it built up a store of renewed, vortexed energy in his overwrought soul. Though he might perish in the execution of the escape, he would still be escaping the life of infinite torture in store for him. Either way, he would still cheat the gloating prince of the succored revenge his sadistic mind craved so dearly. The guards would soon come to bear him off to the prince's buried mines of dread, giving him the sought-after opportunity to execute his newly formulated plan. Groping his way along the rough floor, Grignir finally found his tool in a pool of congealed gore, the carcass of the decapitated rodent, the tool that the very filth he had been sentenced to spawned. When the time came for action, he would have to be prepared, so he set himself to rending the sticky hulk in grim silence, searching by the touch of his fingertips for the lever to freedom. Chapter 5.
Up to the altar and be done with it, wench! Ordered a fidgeting shaman as he gave the female a grim stare accompanied by the wrinkling of his lips to a mirthful grin of delight.
The girl burst into a slow, steady whimper, stooping shakily to her knees and cringing woefully from the priest with both arms wound snake-like around the bulging jade shin rising before her scantily attired figure. Her face was redly inflamed from the salty flow of tears spouting from her glassy, dilated eyeballs. With short, heavy footfalls, the priest approached the female, his piercing stare never wavering from her quivering young countenance. Halting before the terrified girl, he projected his arm outward and motioned her to arise with an upward movement of his hand. The girl's whimpering increased slightly, and she sunk closer to the floor rather than arising. The flickering torches outlined her trim build with a weird, ornate glow, as it cast a ghostly shadow dancing in horrid waves of splendor over smoothly worn whiteness of the marble-hewn altar. The shaman's lips curled back farther, exposing a set of blackened, decaying molars, which transformed his slovenly grin into a wide, greasy arc of sadistic mirth, and alternately interposed into the female a strong sensation of stomach-curdling nausea.
"Have it as you will, female,"
gloated the enhanced priest as he bent over at his waist, projecting his ape-like arms forward and clasped the female's slender arms with his hairy round fists. With an inward surge of his biceps, he harshly jerked the trembling girl to her feet and smothered her salty wet cheeks with the moldy touch of his decrepit, dull red lips. The vile stench of the shaman's hot, fetid breath overcame the nauseated female with a deep, soul-searing sickness, causing her to wrench her head backwards and regurgitate a slimy orange-white stream of swelling gore over the richly woven purple robe of the enthused acolyte. The priest's lips trembled with a malicious rage as he removed his callous paws from the girl's arms and replaced them with tightly around her undulating neck, shaking her violently to and fro. The girl gasped a tortured groan from her clamped lungs, her sea-blue eyes bulging forth from damp sockets. Cocking her right foot backwards, she leashed it desperately outwards with the strength of a demon possessed, lodging her sandaled foot squarely between the shaman's testicles. The startled priest released The startled priest released his crushing grip, crimping his body over at the waist, overlooking his recessed belly, wide open in a deep chasm. His face flushed to a rose-red shade of crimson, eyelids fluttering wide with eyeballs protruding blindly outwards from their sockets to their utmost perimeters, while his lips quivered wildly about, allowing an agonized wallow to gust forth as his breath billowed from burning lungs. His hands reached out, clutching his urinary gland as his knees wobbled. for a few seconds, then buckled, causing the ruptured shaman to collapse in an egg-huddled mass to the granite pavement, rolling helplessly about in his agony. The pathetic screeches of the shaman groveling in dejected misery upon the hand-hewn granite-laid pavement, worn smooth by countless hours of arduous sweat and toil, a welter of ichor oozing through his clenched hands, attracted the perturbed attention of his comrades from their fetid ululations. The actions of this rebellious wench bespoke the credence. This rebellious wench bespoke the credence of an unheard. The actions of this rebellious wench bespoke the credence of an unheard of sacrilege. Never before in a lost maze of untold eons had a chosen one dared to demonstrate such blasphemy in the face of the cult's idolic deity. The girl cowered in unreasoning terror, helpless in the face of the emblazoned acolyte's rage. Her orchid-tussled face smothered betwixt her bulging bosom as she shut her curled lashed, tightly hoping to open them, and find herself awakening from a morbid nightmare. Yet the hand of destiny decreed her no such mercy. An antagonized pack of leering shaman, converging tensely upon her prostrate form, were entangled all too lividly in the grim web of reality. Shuddering from the clammy touch of the shaman as they grappled with her supple form, hands wrenching at her slender arms and legs in all directions, her bare body being molested in the midst of the labyrinth of orange smudges, purpled satin, and mangled skulls, shadowed in an eerie crimson glow, her confused head reeled, then clouded in a mist of enshrouding ebony as she lapsed beneath the protective sheet of unconsciousness to a land peach and resign. This brings us to the end of chapters 5 and the end of episode 2 of Goodnight Stories with Nick. I hope you've enjoyed this reading of Jim Tice's The Eye of Argon, and I hope that you join us tomorrow to find out what happens with this scantily clad harlot and the noble Grignir and his rat. Sleep well, sweet dreams.